bottom of the fourth. They were behind Dad's little house in Malden, just the two of them, sitting in lawn chairs that were a little too rusty, looking out over grass that was a little too long. The lawn dwarves seemed to peer at her, smiling secret, unpleasant smiles from deep in their clumps of weeds. She was crying because Dad was being mean to her. He was never mean to her. He always hugged her and kissed the top of her head and called her sugar. But now he was being mean. All because she didn't want to open the cellar bulkhead under the kitchen window and go down four steps and get him a can of beer from the case he kept down there where it was cool. She was so upset that her face must have broken out because it was all itchy. Her arms, too. "Baby Buntin', Daddy's gone a-huntin'," he said, leaning toward her, and she could smell his breath. He didn't need another beer. He was drunk already. The air coming out of him smelled like yeast and dead mice. "Why do you want to be such a little chicken guts? You don't have a single drop of ice water in your veins." Still crying, but determined to show him she did so have ice water in her veins, a little anyway, she got out of the rusty lawn chair and went over to the even rustier bulkhead door. Oh, she just itched all over, and she didn't want to open that door because there was something awful on the other side. Even the lawn dwarves knew. You only had to look at their sly smiles to get that. She reached for the handle, though. She grasped it, as behind her Dad jeered in that horrible stranger's voice to, "Go on! Go on, Baby Button! Go on, Sugar! Go on, Toots! Go on and do it!" She pulled the door up, and the stairs leading down to the cellar were gone. The stairwell itself was gone. Where it had been was a monstrous, bulging wasp's nest. Hundreds of wasps were flying out of it through a black hole like the eye of a man who's died surprised, and no, it wasn't hundreds. But thousands. Plump, ungainly poison factories flying straight at her. There was no time to get away. They would all sting her at once, and she would die with them crawling on her skin, crawling into her eyes, crawling into her mouth, pumping her tongue full of poison on their way down her throat. Trisha thought she was screaming, but when she thumped her head against the underside of the tree trunk, showering bits of bark and moss into her sweaty hair and waking herself up, she heard only a series of tiny, kittenish, mewling sounds. They were all her locked throat would allow. For a moment she was utterly disoriented, wondering why her bed felt so hard, wondering what she had thumped her head on. Was it possible she had actually gotten under her bed? And her skin was crawling, literally crawling from the dream she had just escaped. Oh God, what a terrible nightmare. She wrapped her head again, and stuff began to come back. She wasn't on her bed, or even under it. She was in the woods. Lost in the woods. She had been sleeping under a tree, and her skin was still crawling. Not from fear, but because... "Get off, all you bastards! Get off!" she cried in a high, frightened voice, and waved her hands rapidly back and forth in front of her eyes. Most of the minches and mosquitoes lifted from her skin and reformed their cloud. The crawling sensation stopped, but the terrible itching remained. There were no wasps, but she had been bitten just the same. Bitten in her sleep by pretty much anything that happened by, and stopped for a chomp. She itched everywhere, and she needed to pee. Trisha crawled out from under the tree trunk, gasping and wincing. She was stiff everywhere from her tumble down the rocky slope, especially in her neck and left shoulder, and both her left arm and left leg. The limbs she had been lying on were asleep. "Numb as pegs," her mother would have said. Grown-ups, at least the ones in her family, had a saying for everything. Numb as a peg, happy as a lark, lively as a cricket, deaf as a post, dark as the inside of a cow, dead as a... No, she didn't want to think of that one, not now. Trisha tried to get on her feet, couldn't, and made her way into the little crescent of clearing at a hobbling crawl. As she moved, some of the feeling started to come back into her arm and leg. Those unpleasant, tingling bursts of sensation. Needles and pins. "Damn it, blast!" she croaked, mostly just to hear the sound of her own voice. "It's dark as the inside of a cow out here." Except, as she stopped by the brook, Trisha realized that it most surely wasn't. The little clearing was filled with moonlight, cold and lucid, strong enough to cast a firm shadow beside her. and put ash-bright sparkles on the water of her little stream. The object in the sky overhead was a slightly misshapen silver stone, almost too bright to look at. But she looked anyway, her swollen, itchy face and upcast eyes solemn. Tonight's moon was so bright that it had embarrassed all but the brightest stars into invisibility, and something about it, or about looking at it from where she was, made her feel how alone she was. Her earlier belief that she would be saved just because Tom Gordon had gotten 3 outs in the top of the ninth was gone. Might as well knock on wood, toss salt back over your shoulder, or make the sign of the cross before you stepped into the batter's box, as Nomar Garcia Parra always did. There were no cameras here, no instant replays, no cheering fans. The coldly beautiful face of the moon suggested to her that the subaudible was more plausible after all. A god who didn't know he, or it, was a god. One with no interest in lost little girls. One with no real interest in anything. A knocked-out, loaded god whose mind was like a circling cloud of bugs and whose eye was the wrapped and vacant moon. Trisha bent over the stream to splash her throbbing face, saw her reflection and moaned. The wasp sting above her left cheekbone had swollen some more. Perhaps she had scratched it or bumped it in her sleep, bursting through the mud she had smeared on it like a newly awakened volcano bursting through the old caked lava of its last eruption. It had mashed her eye out of shape, making it all crooked and freakish, the sort of eye that made you glance away if you saw it floating toward you, usually in the face of a mentally retarded person on the street. The rest of her face was as bad or even worse, lumpy where she had been stung, merely swollen where mosquitoes in their hundreds had had at her while she was sleeping. The water by the bank where she crouched was relatively still, and in it she saw there was at least one mosquito still on her. It clung to the corner of her right eye, too logy to even pull its proboscis from her flesh. Another of those grown-up sayings occurred to her. Too stuffed to jump. She struck at it and it burst, filling her eye with her own blood, making it sting. Trisha managed not to scream, but a wavery sound of revulsion escaped her tightly pressed lips. She looked unbelievingly at the blood on her fingers. That one mosquito could hold so much, no one would believe it. She dipped her cupped hands into the water and washed her face. She didn't drink any, vaguely remembering someone say that woods water could make you sick. But the feel of it on her hot and lumpy skin was wonderful, like cold satin. She dipped up more, wetting her neck and soaking her arms to the elbow. Then she scooped up mud and began to apply it, not just on the bites this time, but all over, from the round collar of her 36 Gordon shirt right up to the roots of her hair. As she did it, she thought of an I Love Lucy episode she'd seen on Nick at Night, Lucy and Ethel at the beauty parlor, both of them wearing these funky 1958 mud packs, and Desi had come in and looked from one woman to the other, and he had said, "Hey, Lucy, which one are you?" And the audience had howled. She probably looked like that, but Trisha didn't care. There was no audience out here, no laugh track either, and she couldn't stand to be bitten anymore. It would drive her crazy if she was. She applied mud for 5 minutes, finishing with a couple of careful dabs to the eyelids, then bent over to look at her reflection. What she saw in the relatively still water by the bank was a minstrel show mud girl by moonlight. Her face was a pasty gray, like a face on a vase pulled out of some archaeological dig. Above it, her hair stood up in a filthy spout. Her eyes were white and wet and frightened. She didn't look funny, like Lucy and Ethel getting their beauty treatments. She looked dead. Dead and badly embarned, or whatever they called it. Speaking to the face in the water, Trisha intoned. Then Little Black Sambo said, "Please, tigers, do not take my fine new clothes." But that wasn't funny either. She smeared mud up her lumpy, itchy arms and then lowered her hands toward the water, meaning to wash them off, but that was stupid. The gosh damn old bugs would just bite her there. The pins and needles had mostly worked out of her arm and leg. Trisha was able to squat and pee without falling over. She was also able to stand up and walk, although she grimaced with pain each time she moved her head more than a little to the right or left. She supposed she had a kind of whiplash injury, like the one Mrs. Chetwynd from up the block had gotten when some old man had rammed her car from behind and she waited for a traffic light to change. The old man hadn't been hurt a bit, but poor Mrs. Chetwynd had been in a neck brace for 6 weeks. Maybe they would put her in a neck brace when she got out of this. Maybe they would take her to a hospital in a helicopter with a red cross on the belly like in MASH and... Forget it, Tricia. It was the scary, cold voice. No neck brace for you. No helicopter ride either. Shut up, she muttered. But the voice wouldn't. You won't even get in barn because they're not even going to find you. You'll die out here, just wander around in these woods until you die, and the animals will come and eat your rotting body, and someday a hunter will come along and find your bones. There was something so terribly plausible about this last... She had heard similar stories on the TV news not just once but several times, it seemed, that she began to cry again. She could actually see the hunter, a man in a bright red woolen jacket and an orange cap, a man who needed a shave, looking for a place to lie up and wait for a deer, or maybe just wanting to take a leak. He sees something white and thinks at first, just a stone, but as he gets closer, he sees that the stone has eye sockets. Stop it, she whispered. Walking back to the fallen tree and the wrinkled spread remains of the poncho under it. She hated the poncho now. She didn't know why, but it seemed to symbolize everything that had gone wrong. Stop it, please. The cold voice would not. The cold voice had one more thing to say. One more thing, at least. Or maybe you won't just die. Maybe the thing out there will kill you and eat you.